This is the Skilding Podcast. On this episode of the podcast, we talk to Kirsty Lewis, who is the founder of the School of Facilitation. And they are a school for facilitators. It's a global organization. And this episode, we talk about Tools of Titans, and we make the point, I think, several times during the episode that they're is so much in this book, Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss, that there's just no way we could have got through every single key takeaway or most actionable content. But we pulled out some that resonated with me, resonated with Kirsty, and hopefully you get something out of it. So on with the show. Hello, welcome to the podcast. This is Kevin Revent with the Skilding Podcast, and today we are joined by Kirsty Lewis. Kirsty, who are you? What are we doing here?
Hey, Kirsty Lewis, founder of School of Facilitation. And today we're going to talk about a book and an author. Yeah, that I've had. I was working out a relationship with from afar since probably about 2010. And now we're talking about Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss.
Excellent. Yeah, and we were talked before, just for anyone listening. Hopefully there's people listening. Before we started recording, we were talking about the size of the book and the amount of content that's in it and stuff. So usually what we would do is go through each chapter. But like I said, we'll be here for a week if we were trying to do that. So tell us who Tim Ferriss is, first of all.
Good question. How do you describe Tim Ferriss? I think if you looked him up in the world of social media, he's like an influencer now. However, when he started life, he was, as he said, he's a geek who takes notes and he measures everything.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the earlier people that was talking about life hacks. So his first two books, he brought out a lot of books called The 4-Hour Week, The 4-Hour Body. And he talked about what are the essential tools you need in your life to be able to, I don't know,
optimize,
that's a great word, like optimize life, optimize work, optimize living, optimize your fitness, optimize your food. And he's a bit geeky, but he has a gazillion million followers in the world now.
So this book, Tools of Titans, tell us a little bit about it. What is it?
Tools of Titans was printed 2016, and it is essentially I should have counted how many chapters there are, but basically he went and interviewed and spoke to people who have influenced him in his life. I think there's a good like 100 plus chapters there, but they're like 4 or 5 pages long. And he interviews, let's just have a look, people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tony Robbins, Brené Brown, I didn't realize was there, Seth Rogen, Paulo Coelho, Alan de Botton, who else have we got that we might know? Jamie Foxx, the actor, musician, Ramit Sethi. So he interviews some really interesting people, and he then is talking to them about, I guess, their life hacks and optimization. And the reason I brought the book at the time was not to read it cover to cover, because this is not a book that you read cover to cover, but to be able to dip in and dip out and just get some life lessons and to get some inspiration at times when I need it.
Yeah, and I was saying to you again before we started recording that I was glad you picked this book, because I've had it on my shelf and I've read it when it came out and I'd forgotten how good it was, and I was looking at it over the weekend. And it's exactly that. It's a book you dip in and out of, that you kind of pick the person you might get something from and read their 3 or 4 pages and close it over again.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he split the book up into 3 parts, healthy, wealthy and wise, which is genius as well. It was a nice little touch. And then he breaks the people down then, or kind of grouped the people into those sections, like people will help you be healthy, people who'll help you be wealthy, and people who'll help you be wise. So
And actually I've just found what I really like about his books, he always has like, he's very insistent. There's either a chapter or maybe 2 to 3 chapters you have to read. And the rest he actually says, please dip and out. Yeah. So he has a page that says, read this first, how to use the book. And it actually says, you know, I'm in France. And I came here to set aside to review all the lessons I'd learned from nearly 200 world-class performers I'd interviewed on the Tim Ferriss Show. So he has a podcast as well. So this book is exactly that, a distillation of those 200 people and what he learned from them.
Yeah, and I read that bit as well. And he said that he was writing this originally for himself, as like, so he's like, he's a big geek who like takes a lot of notes. And one of the things he said he takes notes on is his workouts since he was like 18 or something.
Yeah.
Every single workout he's ever done, he's written down, which is,
I couldn't imagine doing that.
No, it's weird.
And I think that's what appeals to me about him, Kevin. He is the antithesis of me. I'm a prolific note taker when something really interests me. I'm not a consistent note taker or even measurer.
Yeah.
And I know there's people probably listening who that's to them is super important. The antithesis.
I don't have the discipline to.
No, that's it. It is discipline. He's incredibly disciplined.
Yeah. Like it's. So it's actually, you know, getting into the book now. Did you read the Jocko Willink one? So people who've listened to me on the podcast before, I sound a bit tragic because I talk about Jocko Willink a little bit. He's a former Navy SEAL, and I think I sound like your man from The Office, Gareth. You know, he's like I don't think I'm in the Navy SEALs just because I talk like him. But he wrote a book, and one of the lessons he has in this book in Tools of Titans, is discipline equals freedom. That.
Yeah.
You know, he says is you avoid decision fatigue. Like, will I work out? Will I not? You just work out and that's it.
Okay. So I do have two things in life that I do. So I've got a really strict training plan. So I'm going to do an Ironman. So I know exactly every day what I've got to train. And yeah. I've also outsourced my food in that I have a really great, again, trainer who tells me what to eat. And now you tell it like that. I have no decision fatigue on either of those things anymore.
Yeah. And I think I said this in a recent podcast as well. So during the pandemic there, I put on a lot of weight, and when it was over then, me and a few of my friends went to a concert in Italy. One of my friends I hadn't seen in a long time because of the lockdowns and stuff, he'd said, as a best friend would, you know, you're after getting awful fat there, Kev. And I'm like, yep, I have. I'll lose the weight eventually, kind of, you know. So he laid down a challenge to me to lose 2 stone within 6 months, which is like that's a slow incline, I think, to lose the weight. I think I could probably lose 2 stone in 6 weeks if I had to.
Yeah.
But because I had to lose 2 stone and be 2 stone lighter it was Christmas Day, I had to be 2 stone lighter by. It made it hard because I could lose the weight, but then I had to keep it off until at least Christmas Day. So like it was interesting that it was just like I can go hell for leather at something and get it done and then just kind of stop. Whereas this, I had to kind of go slowly. And that was something that kind of stuck with me, that discipline equals freedom. I had in my head, the phrase I had was emotionless discipline. There's no question. I don't feel like working out. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like doing it. You're still going to do it. And I remember having this kind of conversation in my head going, oh, maybe I won't do it today and I'll do it twice tomorrow. I go, we're not negotiating this. Like, there's no negotiation here. You're just going to do it. And that's
just
it.
Going to do it.
So that's interesting. Outsourced it as well. So.
Yeah. And it works weirdly.
Yeah.
Just as you've been talking, I've started flicking because actually you and I both said, I will admit I am a terrible page corner turner downer when I read a book. So
it's the exact same.
Non-fiction books, I buy physical and fiction books, I buy on Kindle. So I need to be able to see in like flick backs and forwards. So I've just turned to one of the pages that I've turned down, and it's in the Matt Mullenweg chapter. And he is one of the original founders of WordPress, the lead developer of WordPress. Anyway, what's really great about the way the chapters are structured, you get some quotes from the individual, you get a summary of who they are so you know who you're reading about. You also get their spirit animal, which I think is hysterical. So Matt Mullenweg is a mantis shrimp. Anyway, he, interestingly, we were talking about slowing down. He said, advice to your 20-year-old self, slow down. I think a lot of the mistakes of my youth were mistakes of ambition, not mistakes of sloth. So just slowing down, whether that's meditating, whether that's taking time for yourself away from screens, whether that's really focusing in on who you're talking to or who you're with. I thought that was really, so that to me has been a big message in the recent past.
Yeah.
And I'm in my late 40s now.
Yeah.
but slow down, because in the past I've really been encouraged to go fast, get things done, and that was the reward, or given a perception of rewards that, you know, by doing things fast.
Yeah, it was like, it's like we did another podcast on, did you ever hear of Ryan Holiday? So Stillness is the Key is one of his books that we did, and he's all about the Stoics and the, you know,
yes,
all those guys back in the day, but like being still and kind of appreciating the moment and having gratitude. And that's one thing I took from the last few years is that idea of, you know, you think you have control of your life. You think the more stuff you do, the more you'll be able to achieve and whatever.
Yeah.
But actually, do you know, I read a quote from Michael J. Fox the other day, and he was talking about, you know, having Parkinson's and stuff. And he said, everyone thinks that your life is concrete and steel, but it's paper and feathers. And I thought, that is exactly what it is. You think you have control over your life, and you don't. You just, you can make plans, and you can kind of, you know, keep pushing forward and doing things, but, you know, slowing down and just kind of relaxing and, you know.
Do you think as well, we're both of an age, and that's something I've only realized in my late 40s.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like you, like that Matt Mullenweg in my 20s, like going to go. And even with working out, I would have been like that, like, just keep like heavier weights, the better, like, and do more reps and killing yourself. And I ended up with an operation on my back then. Like, it was ridiculous. Like,
oh my goodness me.
Yeah, I had a disc.
Wow.
Disc taken out. But yeah, like, it's silly stuff. Like, and even after that operation, I went health and leather at the weights.
Health and leather?
Yeah.
Can I share another part, the way he writes his books as well. So we should just say there's like the grayed out chapters. I can't remember what they are. They're like his tips pages. So they're not written in particular.
Yeah, they're not interviews with people. They're like kind of side thoughts, I think, actually.
Yeah.
You start talking there, I'll look up what it is.
So I've just also marked another one called The Canvas Strategy. And I reread this. And I was like, why did I mark this? So in Rome, in the early years of the Roman system of art and science, as it says here, there was a role called the antiambulu, which literally meant one who clears the path. So this person proceeded in front of his patron anywhere they traveled in Rome, making messages, and generally making the patron's life easier. And so I carried on reading, like, why did I mark this? And then I realized, so basically it was saying, you know, there's a problem in our worlds. So like most of us, our internships or entry level positions, a lot of us know where we want to go. Oh no, that's a lie. We have a sense of the space we want to be in, and getting into those roles can be really hard. But once you get in as well, there is sometimes an attitude of, well, I can do this and I can go far and go fast really quickly. But the suggestion that he's making is find someone to be your mentor and find someone to learn from and almost go in and be of service to them and learn from them first by being this, I might not be saying it right, anti-ambulu role. So by attaching yourself to someone and learning from them, that will then set you up better in life going forwards, especially if you're entry level, because what credibility, what knowledge, what hours of experience have you got? Even if you're super passionate, you've read all the books about these spaces. So they're saying this is a really great way of learning.
You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons. And listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you one third of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show. Yeah, Yeah, it's like, it reminds me of that a presupposition from NLP that the map is not the territory. Like, you might have read all the books and you've done all the theory, but you haven't actually done the thing. You haven't. It's like learning about presentations or something. Like, you can read all the books and have the best slides until you're actually standing in front of an audience with your heart racing and your mouth dry. You don't know anything. You
can't do it. Yeah. I like that also he said, just to be clear, it's not about kissing us. It's not about making someone look good. It's about providing the sport so others can be good.
Mm.
So you're clearing the path for the people above you, and you will eventually create a path for yourself.
Yeah.
And there's the other things he said, can we be sure of a few fundamental realities? And I did think, oh, this is interesting message for some of us in our younger years. You're not nearly as good or as important as you think you are. You have an attitude that needs to be readjusted. And most of what you think you know, or most of what you learned in books or in school, is out of date or wrong.
Yeah, humility. Like, I think, again, talk about being in our 40s. Like, that's, I think you get to this age and you think, I've been humbled and embarrassed so many times. How could I possibly ever think I know anything about anything? You have to walk into a room assuming that everyone you're talking to knows something you don't.
Yeah. And I just thought, gosh. So then that made me think, because I'm having this whole conversation in my head about age, because I am tipping 50 next year and I can't quite work out how that happened. Is like, where could I find someone to be part of the school of facilitation team who really wants to become a really great facilitator and trainer, and I can support them? It's more than mentorship in a way. And that made me quite excited. It's like, what can I be giving back to someone else now? And I wonder whether others think like that, like, as you get to an age or you get to a space of knowledge and experience, like, what can you do to give back in terms of legacy?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that at any stage in your career or, you know, in life, really, you should just be of service to as many people as you can be. And
yeah,
like you said, like, that'll help you forge your own path then by help as many people get what they want, and you'll eventually get what you want.
Yeah. And I think there is that piece about, I mean, one of my values is abundance. So the whole mentality of there's enough for everybody, but how do you, and I think a lot of us are trainers and facilitators because we like to be in service.
Yeah.
We help.
Yeah. There's, I don't know, I'm actually looking at my notes here and I don't know what to talk about next.
Go on.
There's a guy, so he talks about, the single decision. So those grayed out chapters are they're non-profile chapters. So that's the way he describes it. I think that they're not these are kind of thoughts on just kind of random stuff or whatever.
Okay.
So he has this thing, this one, Christopher Sommer is his name, or Summer, it's Sommer, who is a strength and conditioning coach for American gymnasts. And he talks about the single decision, and this really hit home with me even when I was reading it last night. I'll read it out here. That's the best thing to do. So he says, if the commitment is to the long-term goal and not to a series of smaller intermediate goals, then only one decision needs to be made and adhered to. Clear, simple, straightforward. Mm. Much easier to maintain than having to make small decision after small decision to stay the course when dealing with each step along the way. This provides far too many opportunities to inadvertently drift from your chosen goal. The single decision is the most powerful tools in the toolbox. And I think that about my own business that's still on the up and up. There's no decision about whether I'm going to do something for today or not. The decision is that this is going to happen. This is happening. And like, all the little bumps along the way and people who say no to you and people who don't answer your emails, all that's irrelevant because this is happening. And I read that going, oh, that's me. I've made that single decision a long time ago and I've never deviated from it. As much as I've gone through pivots and stuff. So that one really kind of, and like you doing an Ironman, like, this is happening, and, you know.
Yeah.
Is it?
I myself, so it might turn into a duathlon, which is then the swim and the bike, but that's a conversation, but there will be a something. And I've also in this, I've decided it's not about the day of the Ironman or the duathlon. It's about the journey to get there and noticing, because of the training and the quality and the food and the thinking, like what is it? Yeah. What's it like? And taking that experience.
What made you decide to do that? Why have you done those things before?
Challenge. Yeah, I've done a few tries, but only short sprint ones. It's the challenge of it.
Yeah.
And I always play sport. It's sort of just part and parcel of my life. I can't even imagine a day of not doing some activity.
Mm.
And a good friend of mine is also a coach, and he's like, well, why don't you?
Mm.
I'm like, yeah, why don't I?
Yeah.
and I'm daft enough to go, yeah, why not?
Yeah. I did a triathlon once. I think it was a sprint one. I'd never done it before, and it was the swim. I thought, I can swim, no big deal. Did no practice in, like, it was in an open river, you know.
Oh my God.
The River Liffey in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got into the water, and it's pretty cold. Don't know if you know that about rivers. They're pretty cold. Yeah. And it never went away. And I just bobbed along the water, like, and just had, I was dragged out at the end. Like, went around the buoy, like, and came back. Got dragged out, just dumped onto the ground, like, and, like, it was just horrendous.
Yeah. And it makes you then recognize the reason why practice is important.
Yeah.
Because even if it's something we go, oh, this is really obvious, I can do it, and that can be anything in life.
Yeah.
There is probably a truth in that, yet sometimes we get spat out by the system because we aren't prepared and we haven't laid the foundations. It was really interesting. I was away on holiday in Bali, and I sat with a yoga meditation teacher, and he was telling me a story about a student who from Colombia who was like, I'm gonna go and do a 10-day silent retreat, and I'm gonna sit in silence, you know, I can do silent.
Yeah.
And apparently he went and did this 10-day retreat, and I can never say the word properly, a vipassana, sorry to your listeners, someone will be muttering going, this is how you say it. Anyway, it's a known thing.
Okay.
In the world of Buddhism, you do a 10-day silent retreat. And so the teacher was telling me that the student really struggled, and a lot of people struggled, but to the point of almost slight madness, because it transpired, he thought he could just go and do it, but he'd never done any form of meditation practice. No one had taught him to even sit still for 5 minutes, let alone 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And in silence in his own head. And so the teacher I was with was saying to me, is really important in anything is you lay the foundations and you lay down some practices. So if someone had potentially sat with a student and shared and got them to practice silence meditation, they would have then been aware of what their mind was going to potentially do. So yeah. It then makes me really think about whatever we do in life, what are the foundations that you can then lean into? Because that was the point. It's like, and I talk about this in facilitation training and train the trainer, is you need some foundations of the work so that you know what to do when maybe something goes slightly awry or you're having an internal wobble. And also you know how to give the best experience to the participants and to potentially the business you're working for.
Yeah.
So I think foundations are super important. Otherwise you just feel really wobbly, don't you?
Yeah. There's actually, that reminds me, another thing that Jocko Willink would say about training is that you should train the basics again and again and again. Just train the fundamentals.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
And because when the shit hits the fan, that's when you'll fall back on.
You lean back into them.
Yeah.
And I always remember I used to do a lot of sales training, and my background was Guinness and Diageo. And I remember, like, a lot of the senior sales people were like, oh, why do I have to go and do the sales training? I know how to do it.
Yeah.
And time and again, though, the sort of L&D, learning and development leaders would be like, yes, you do. And you need to know how to do the basics. Firstly, so you've got it for yourself. Secondly, so you can replicate it with your teams and support them. And actually, at the end of the day, we're selling beer, and these are the fundamentals that come through time and again. It doesn't have to be the sexy negotiation skills that you do. That happens maybe once a year.
But
the everyday basics is where we need to know that everyone is doing well.
Yeah, those fundamentals, it's an interesting thing. Even with, again, working out, like, it's stretching, warming up, go through your routine.
Which gets more important, listeners, as you get older. Otherwise, it gets sorer and hurtier.
Yes, it does indeed. Yeah. Okay. Who else in the book stood out to you?
I had an Alan de Botton, but I don't know if I'm going to find it. Where is it? Oh, yeah. So Alan de Botton, we like a bit of Alan de Botton. So he's now known as someone who helped start the School of Life in London in 2008. I liked his quote. It said, "When people seem like they are mean, they're almost never mean. They're anxious."
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that reminds me of another NLP thing, that everyone is doing the best that they can with the information that they have.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me. Like that, I teach my kids that, like that just because someone's being mean doesn't mean they're being mean on purpose. Mean. They're like,
something's going wrong with them. Yeah. I say that in sales training. I said, look, your buyers don't wake up thinking I'm going to be a dick today.
Yeah.
Like no one does. No one wakes up and goes, do you know what, Kirsty, I've got a call with her. I'm recording a podcast. I'm going to be a real pain in the backside. I said, no one does that.
Yeah.
No one's that intentional, or even there's something else behind the behavior. There's always there's another layer to what you're seeing here.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know who I heard saying before, like that there's no such thing as grown-ups. Everyone is just making it up as they go along. That might have actually been in that book as well, that there's all of us are just kids who become a year older every year, and then suddenly we're supposed to know all the answers. Like, you know, there's no such thing as grown-ups. We're all just babies that got older and achier. So
how about this one? I like this. He said, don't expect others to understand you. To blame someone for not understanding you fully is deeply unfair, because first of all, we don't understand ourselves. And even if we do understand ourselves, we have such a hard time communicating ourselves to other people. Therefore, to be furious and enraged and bitter that people don't get all of who we are is a really cruel piece of immaturity.
Mm. Yeah, this book is, it really is a reference book, like, for going to know what actually I need to figure something out here for this. And
let's be really clear as well, just so people can get a perception of how big it is. We're talking, it's over 651 pages.
Yeah.
So there's loads of really good things in there. And also I'm just noticing at the back, it's like recommended book list, the questions he always asks his guests in a rapid fire, the top 25 episodes from his show. There's loads in there. Recommend it.
There was a one that stood out to me was Phil Liben. Mm-hmm. He's the founder of Evernote. And it's just a real practical one, but this one really kind of, I was going to say it amused me. It didn't amuse me. I just thought this is a good one. I wonder if people will recognize this. He talks about the rule of 3 and 10. That when you're building a company, when it's just one person, everything pretty much works okay. When there's three people, then you're into, you know, people booking time off and payroll and stuff. And then you get to 10 people and it all breaks again. Then you get to 30 people and 100 people. And so it's every multiple of 3 and every power of 10, everything breaks. All of your systems break. But he also said something interesting as well, is that he was talking to a guy who is the founder of a company that had 10,000 employees. And he was looking back and saying, yeah, that definitely happened. But he also made the point, he said, well, my next step on that is going to be 30,000. So to go from 10,000 to 30,000 might take 10 years. And he said, what happens is a lot of companies, they feel stagnant because they think, well, I need to, you know, justify my job in some way. And so they start implementing all these ridiculous innovations to, you know, change their communication channels and all that for no reason, for stuff that already works. So there's like a flip side to the coin, if you like, that everything will break every time you get a multiple of 3 or a power of 10. But also, you'll get to a certain point where that is no longer true, you know, where you're just going to have to leave things alone.
Yeah. There is something about that as well. So my business is small. I always run an associate model, even for those who work with me in the back office, but I've had the team with me in up to 10 years. And there's part of me, I am the classic, hey team, I've had a new idea. And they're like, literally I see their faces. Yeah. I get photographs often of them trying to manage things for me. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. Okay. Dial it back. So I am currently, everything is just going well. And part of me wants to add in new things. And actually I am now going for the opposite and going, I might dial things back and take things out, because why am I trying to add more and more when actually I don't need to? And that, just anyone who's listening who run their own business or a small business, it's just them, or they've expanded and they've got some others who now work with them, is really question like what is the reason for growing? Mm. Like, what does that bring you? Because what I've worked out is it costs me a lot of money. That's not a problem. But it costs me a lot of my time now and effort. And I'm the one who is the sort of breadwinner of the team,
yeah,
because of the way it's structured. And it's like, wow, it's a lot of effort. And I had an easier and sometimes different, happier time when I was an associate and just worked a clear 100 days a year.
Yeah.
I was off traveling, did loads of cool things. And now I'm like, oh, I brought this all in-house and I'm doing it myself. It's like, whoa, intense.
Yeah, I'm like that with my co-founder, Brian. Like, I'd text him 11 o'clock and I'd go, what if we did this? And I'm sitting there going, how come he hasn't replied?
I never do that to my, I'm sound asleep by 11 o'clock, but we are an early bird team with a lot. There's a lot of chat that goes on potentially at 6:30 in the morning, quick sort of chats. And I'm like, that's not sensible either.
Yeah. But like, I did these ideas, like I these, there's things I text him and he doesn't reply, and I'm wondering why he hasn't replied. Then a week later, I'm scrolling back on, I don't even remember coming up with that idea. Yeah, it's just, it's like stuff everywhere. Like, just, so I always kind of, with the actual business itself as well, I always think that, you know, I have 10 ideas a day for different businesses. You know, I have an idea to invent a new type of umbrella, you know, like I just have these mad ideas all the time. And it's the ones that stick are the ones you can't shake, I always think, are the ones you should kind of maybe think about or pursue, you know? So that's kind of like my new rule. Like, if I go to text Brian and think, do you know what? If I can still remember this in the morning, text him then, or can I call then?
That's
like,
good.
So.
And it's if it keeps coming back and it pervades your thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. That's Well, that's what this, good. That's what the whole platform was to me, was like, just couldn't leave it alone. So, another
what
one.
Else did you pick out? Yeah, you got another one.
Another one for procrastination. This was, this is me to a T. Like, I am Mr. Procrastination. I have to spend at least half an hour every day just, you know, wandering around the internet, just going, come on, will you get started into something? You know?
Oh, really?
Just like, I don't know. It's just part of my makeup. I don't know. So he has this thing for procrastination, and he has two things that he says he has written on post-its that he sticks to his screen. And one is, being busy is a form of laziness. It's lazy thinking and indiscriminate action, which I think that is exactly right. That's nice. Like the Pareto thing, you know, of like the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
And the other one then is, being busy is most often used as a guise for avoiding the few critically important but uncomfortable actions. Just kind of get yourself busy doing other stuff. And he said, this is the kind of the end of that section, I think, where he said, sometimes people get themselves really busy and kind of worked up into this, you know, crazy state of mind because they're just trying to achieve loads of things. And he said, when you feel like you're losing at the game of life, remember the iconic writer, Kurt Vonnegut, who said about his process, when I write, I feel like an armless, legless man with a crayon in his mouth. Like, just can't, like, that to me was like, yeah, well, if some of the best people in the world just cannot get going or cannot talk themselves into it sometimes, then you're fine, you know. So don't overestimate the world and underestimate yourself. You're better than you think you are, and you're not alone.
Yes, definitely.
So that one hit home for me. So go on, you were going to do one more, if you got one there.
He is one of his open chapters. It's called 8 Tactics for Dealing with Haters. Now, I think this is probably him talking a little bit from his ego because of who he is and the fact that he's had to deal with haters. But I think there's some things in here that are good lessons for all of us. So, and it might be, just imagine you've got an idea that you're sharing even internally in a workplace or putting something out to a client. Number one, it doesn't matter how many people don't get it. What matters is how many people do. Because at the end of the day, it's those that do get it that will help make the difference. Mm. 10% of people will find a way to take anything personally, expect it, and treat it as maths. Well, that was really interesting.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's most trolls, I think, on the internet, isn't it?
Yeah. How about this one? This is about him dealing with online criticism, but I guess in a way as well for us. When in doubt, starve it of oxygen. So if someone's being maybe mean to you or hitting or the hate on you, starve it of oxygen. So i.e. ignore it by 90%. I like this one. Pour gasoline on it. So you promote it. So you talk about that for 8%. Or engage with the trolls after too much wine and really regret it.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Like, I've heard other famous people saying, like, they end up getting into these, like, ridiculous arguments with people, like, another thing. And then it's like that, didn't somebody do, like, a PhD or something on how quickly Hitler gets mentioned in YouTube comments or something, like, you know, it degenerates, like, ridiculously quickly into talking about the Nazis and Hitler, no matter what the topic is. Like, somebody is calling somebody else a Nazi, like, really quickly.
Final ones. If you respond, don't over apologize. So I think that's true of handling objection. You acknowledge what's been said and inquire to what sits behind it rather than apologize for what you've done. You can't reason someone out of something they didn't reason themselves into.
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
This is a quote he had from Colin Powell. Trying to get everyone to like you is a sign of mediocrity. You'll avoid the tough decisions. You'll avoid confronting the people who need to be confronted. So that's interesting. So sometimes we have to be, it's good that someone disagrees with you or challenges it, or I hope no one goes through the hate space, but that just means you're doing something different.
Yeah, there's a great one in another book we did, Working Backward, about Amazon. And I'm trying to remember the exact quote now, but it's something like, like I said, there was meetings, like these two guys who wrote the book were very close to Jeff Bezos and kind of working out there as it was growing. And there was, when you're in meetings, it was something like disagree and comply. I don't think that's the exact words. So like, if there's something you disagree with in a meeting and you, like, you've made your point and, you know, you definitely are, you're not on board. Eventually you just have to just disagree and get on board with it. Like, and it doesn't become personal, you know, it doesn't become, it becomes about the thing rather than the person who's saying the thing. Yeah.
And it's about the thing. Number 7 was, if you want to improve, be content to be thought foolish and stupid. And that's by Epictetus. Epictetus, thank you.
Yeah, he's one of the Stoics. I actually only read that a while ago, actually. I read that from Ryan Holiday, yeah.
And he said, you've got to expect to be ridiculed. And then finally, Living Well is the Best Revenge by George Herbert.
Yeah. Did Marilyn Monroe or somebody say that as well? Or someone else who said that, Living Well is the Best Revenge?
Yeah.
There's another one. Do you ever listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore Histories? So this guy...
Oh, no, but I have this marked. That's one of the first chapters I've marked in here as well. Go on, what did you pick out?
So Dan, just to explain who Dan Carlin was, he's I think he was a journalist who was really into art, into history. And so in that section there, he talks about, he has this podcast called Hardcore History, and he does like 4 and 5 hour long episodes where he'll pick a time in history and just talk about it. Just him talking. It's like an audio book almost. And he'll always say at the start that, you know, I'm not a qualified historian, but, you know, this is what the actual historian said or whatever. But he tells an interesting story at the beginning that it all started with his mother-in-law. So they'd be sitting around the kitchen table having dinner or whatever, and he'd be telling these stories about history. And she's like, why don't you do this as a podcast? And he's like, well, I'm not qualified. And she goes, well, I didn't know you needed a doctorate to tell stories. And he's like, yeah, that's a good point. So the quote from him is, don't be afraid to do something that you're not qualified to do.
Yeah.
So that reminded me of something else as well, that if you're going to do something amazing, you're automatically not qualified to do it. So
none of us are qualified in all reality. I have to say one of my bugbears is having to have qualifications to coach.
Yeah. Certificates of completion drive me insane.
It is a certificate of completion. What about certificate of experience?
Yeah.
Where does that come from? What about certificate of life? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying I'd want to be operated on by a surgeon who
just wants to have a go.
Got a qualification. But I think there's certain jobs and roles in life that definitely need to know that someone has got the capability to be able to do what they're about to do. But some of the spaces that I inhabit, it just, we're not brain surgeons, we're not rocket scientists, we're not dealing with life and death. And it just makes me smile that sometimes the results aren't allowed to speak for themselves, and a better bit of paper that someone might have got 10 years ago is a decision point.
Yeah, that's like even my own qualification. I'm a qualified electronic engineer, and I don't know the first thing about, you know, electronics.
Exactly. It's like learning to drive a car. Yeah. Like learning to drive a car, you get a driver's license and then you don't drive.
Yeah.
But oh no, but you can drive a car. But not really.
Yeah, that's funny. You said something great there, the certificate of experience. I think that's actually what we're building. I might write that down. It is a certificate of experience. That's a good one.
It is, yeah. It is about certificates of experience. Yeah. And being cool about sharing people what are my experiences.
Yeah. Have you any others then before we finish up?
No, nothing. No, nothing else that was jumping out, other than that I just, having said, oh, let's talk about this, reconnecting with the book has been really great.
Yeah. Because
as we started this conversation,
yeah,
the way I often play a game of when I need some inspiration, it's not like I go and look particularly for, I often pick a book off the shelf and then I play the flicking game.
Yeah.
So you just ask the question, what is it I need to know?
Yeah.
And you then stop and then you're like, oh, okay, so this is the lesson for me today.
Yeah.
And I do it with poetry before I read poems. So it's like, yeah, I encourage people, A, pick it up. It's a great book. Get it in hard copy. Don't get it on your Kindle or other devices that you may read your books. This is one that you need to have in your hand to appreciate, to be able to look, to underline, to write notes, to put stickets in, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny you say that, because like, this is my favorite thing about doing the podcast, is that all these books I intend to read or, you know, want to go back to. And then because we were doing this, like, oh, well, now I have to go back to it. It's like a little treat,
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. I love it. It's because honestly, that's one of the books that's been on my shelf going, I have to, because they're all here beside me. I think, oh, I must pick that up again, actually. But I say that about every single one of them. Like every single book that's there, I must pick that up again and have another read of that. So
I've really enjoyed this though, because I think it's made me, want to go back to some other books and just dip in and pick them back up, because I always keep the books that I love and I get value from. So it's like, I need to go back and
do it
again. Why was that?
Well, if you need an excuse, you can come back on any time, Kirsty. It'd be great to have you.
I'd love to. Yeah. God, I can talk about books every day of the week. That would be amazing.
Do you know what happens? Actually, we'll finish the podcast and then I'll tell you what I was going to say. okay, so that's it. Kirsty Lewis, thanks very much for being on. Tell everyone how they can get in touch if they have questions about facilitation.
Find us on LinkedIn, Kirsty Lewis. I'm the one with a bright blue background and a pink jumper. Or schoolofffacilitation.com. Is our website, and Instagram, School of Facilitation.
Can I ask a random question just before we finish? In your LinkedIn, you have 181.5 centimeters. What is that? Is that your height, I assume?
It is my height. Okay. Basically, since lockdown has finished, as many of you did, we met lots of people online, and then I start meeting people in person, and everyone looks at me because I'm just shy of 6 foot. They go, oh, aren't you tall? And I'm like, for Pete's sake, like, yes, I am. And I've been this height since I was sort of 16 and I'm very comfortable. And it just started to really grate on me, Kevin. And so I was like, and it was people on LinkedIn going, well, your profile photo doesn't look tall. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, I get irritated. And I just want to say to my shorter friends and fellows out there, I've never turned around to someone going, oh, aren't you short? Mm. So that's why I did it.
I remember hearing before on, after, you know, like this, we all met in person after the lockdowns and stuff, gone, no matter what height you think somebody is, you're wrong. After meeting them online. It's so true.
Yeah.
Okay. On that bombshell, Kirsty.
Brilliant.
Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you three interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skillding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.